everyone, and welcome to Advanced Engineering Talks, a podcast created by the Advanced Engineering team. A-Talks brings together some of the newest and most innovative minds in engineering and manufacturing to help better the future for our industry. We hope you enjoy the series.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone. I'm once again delighted to welcome you to another Advanced Engineering Talks podcast, where innovation never sleeps. This month, we're going into matters related to power electronics, motors and drives, actually, and specifically a fantastic UK-led sustainable electric motor technology, the UK Alumotor Initiative, which in fact has had a lot of support from Innovate UK. And it's a consortium very much led as a UK project by Ricardo. Basically, it's all about developing a sustainable electric motor for really cutting out the need for scarce material resources, increasing the mass adoption of electrification through, you know, being more sustainable and affordable. The great thing here is as well, it's going to be tailored for UK manufacture and volume production. So it could be a great opportunity for the UK supply chain and ultimately, you know, position the UK at the forefront of the global electric revolution. So I'm delighted to have some key representatives from the consortium, and let me introduce them to you now. We have Andrew Lane, who is Principal Engineer, Electrified Systems, Ricardo Automotive and Industrial. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks very much. Yeah, great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Fantastic. Also delighted to have Rowan Crozier, CEO of Brandauer and Chair of UK of Make UK's National Advisory Board. Welcome, Rowan. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jeremy.
And Stuart Bradley is our third participant. Welcome, Stuart. You're Principal Engineer at Warwick Manufacturing Group, obviously based at the University of Warwick. Welcome and thanks for taking the time also.
Thanks, Jeremy.
So great to have you all with us. This sounds like a fantastic initiative. Andrew, I think, if I may, as the representative, I think, of the lead in the consortium, Ricardo, can I start with basically, you know, what are the aims of the project and where did it come out of, the UK Alumotor project?
Yeah, thanks very much for the intro, Jeremy. Yeah, so the project itself, we're looking to build as a consortium this electric motor concept, which has removed the need for permanent magnets or rare earth materials and also replaces the copper with aluminium windings. Within that, why is that interesting? Why is that important? The challenges of sourcing rare earth magnets and the environmental impacts are kind of well documented. So Ricardo's been looking at alternative options in this space, and what can we do to produce a motor concept that's more sustainable, easier to recycle, and can still deliver the performance and robustness requirements for traction motors in automotive applications.
Interesting. Yeah. And who's involved in the project? Would you like to give us a roundup of how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've built a consortium from a number of different partners kind of within the UK. So on the call, we've got WMG, we've got Stuart here to kind of take us through the stuff from their side. We've got Rowan from Brandauer. So Brandauer are making the electrical steel laminations for this particular project here. I'm really excited to have them on board. In addition to that, we have a company called GTR, Global Technology Racing. They are involved in composite manufacture. So we've got some interesting bits within the motor that we are looking to utilize their skills and expertise from a composite manufacture perspective. We've got Phoenix Scientific Instruments, or PSI is the better known. And they create materials and equipment suitable for rapid prototype gas atomization and printing apparatus. So they're looking at some really cutting edge stuff of how can we use rapid prototype and printing to produce parts for motors. And their TSI together with GTI are looking at perhaps a more high-end, high-performance variant of the motor. And then last but certainly not least, we've got Aspire. Aspire are a company that look at prototype and small-scale manufacture and remanufacture of motors and batteries. They're operating down in the Southwest, and they're kind of leading the way in terms of how we're going to approach to winding this motor, which is one of its particular challenges.
Fine. Fascinating. And I mean, how far have you got in terms of producing a prototype or demonstrator at this stage?
Yeah, so the Alumotor project is actually been something that Ricardo's been in development for quite a few years now. We've gone from some really early stage concepts, looking at very high speed machines, looking at what the best attributes of aluminium windings are and how we might exploit them, to hone in now on what we think is the best attributes of this type of motor, and focus on a low cost, robust type of concept. And we're hoping to apply that to light commercial vehicles, off highway, agri-tech, that sort of area. Perhaps at that point, maybe if I could ask Stuart perhaps to bring in some of his experience here. So from WMG's perspective, they've been really helping us sort of benchmark the landscape and kind of help us pitch where best to exploit this type of technology.
Yes, Stuart, please go ahead. Yeah,
that's great. Thanks, Andy. You mentioned the applications to light commercial vehicles and agri-tech, and the main attribute for the motor is low cost. So we're really pushing the limits in terms of meeting the Advanced Propulsion Centre roadmap targets. I think it was 2021, wasn't it, Andy? And those roadmap targets look for a really quite aggressive low cost per kilowatt installed from 2025 out to 2035. Now, of course, if we're looking at things like light commercial vehicles, agri-tech, construction equipment, then they're not talking about millions of motors. So being able to meet those cost targets with only making a moderate number of machines is actually a bigger task than you might think. And if we think about the approach that Ricardo and the collaboration team have made to cut down cost, we've done a lot of good things. So things like getting rid of expensive rare earth elements from the magnets, Included in that is also the commercial supply chain risk. So buying these magnets from a long supply chain from the other side of the world is not only risky in terms of the commercial aspects, so things like cost, but also things like payment terms, quality, the amount of work in progress that we might have on the ocean at any one time. All of those are a supply chain risk. But then we've also got things like copper as well, which might come from Chile. That's also in scarce demand as well. It's an expensive material, and by going to aluminium windings within the state, which is the bit that WMG is working on, then we're cutting a lot of that cost out as well. So if we look at the main costs within an electric motor, we've addressed the biggest issues really. And the basic design of the machine as well is also quite novel. So it's a synchronous reluctance machine. Now, Andy, maybe you'd like to explain the rotor design a little later on. But let me just say that the stator part of it, which is the bit that WMG is working on, is optimized for manufacturing process, and that's what we're working on with Brandauer and Aspire to get that cost as low as possible. To, as Andy was saying about maintaining the performance and the efficiency that we all desire out of our electric machines, we're doing that as well. But principally, we're looking at cost, robustness, and efficiency. Now, Andy, the rotor is quite a novel and interesting piece of work.
Yeah, thanks very much, Stuart. So yeah, the rotor for a synchronous reluctance machine really is at the heart, and it's what makes it different and what differentiates it from perhaps some other permanent magnet assisted type concepts. At Ricardo, we've spent a huge amount of time in the EMAG simulation, really trying to understand how best to exploit the benefits of a synchronous reluctance approach. And so together with GTR, we've been in an FEA simulation. We've got now a rotor concept that's able to operate at relatively high speeds for this size and this type of motor, and something that we know that we can produce. How do we know that we can actually manufacture it? That's kind of where the Brandauer's expertise come in. So whilst it's very easy for us to design something really whizzy in MotorCAD or in ANSYS or a different simulation package, at the end of the day, we need to be able to manufacture it. And that's where Brandauer and their feedback has really, really helped us. So perhaps Rowan, I don't know, are you able to help explain how Brandauer supported us in some of this design concept?
Yes,
thanks, Rowan.
So, Brandauer are specialists in manufacturing thin gauge stamped parts. And in every motor, there is a stack of thin gauge stamped parts. And if we just focus on the stator for now, they're all, generally speaking, orientated in the same direction. And we have to stamp them, orientate them in volume once we get there, and provide that finished lamination stack of stators to be later wound in its finished format. The problem is you can't go to that from day one. We need to be taking conceptual designs, which we've seen a fair few from the consortium, and we have to go through those conceptual designs and actually try and consider at that early stage, before we've even stamped a part or cut any metal in at all, what are the implications of doing this, and is it going to cost us more or less in a volume environment? And that's something that we've spent the last 10 years honing our skills by taking on in a sort of staged way, different contracts, different R&D projects that have allowed us to develop a particular specialism in this scaling approach. First of all, on paper, being able to consider some of those commercial fallouts on any concept that comes through. But then obviously we need to scale up so we can actually then offer a handful of parts, then more than a handful of parts, and then volume. That's the whole point of it. Our sort of last 10 years of being involved in multiple different types of thin gauge lamination stamping has allowed us hopefully to contribute into this consortia to sort of say, well, if we take that approach, or we make it that thin, you're taking out cost here, but maybe giving you an efficiency problem there. What we want to do is to put the optimum number of laminations in a stack that give us the best performance, but also in the future, the best price.
And I think, Ryan, that point there, you're just talking around a best price. It's the real kind of key thing. Yeah. And the kind of expertise that Ryan's described there has allowed us to do some of those early cost trade-offs right at the start and allow us to build our first prototype concepts with a view of how they will be manufactured in the future. And this is going to give us a lot more confidence in the performance of these first prototypes actually reflecting what we'll see once we get to volume production as well.
It'd be great, by the way, if you have a prototype in time for the Advanced Engineering Show in November. We'll be happy to display it on the show floor.
Certainly looking at the timing plans, that's going to be a challenge. Yeah. But that's a challenge that I'm hearing. Yeah. And I would love to. I'd love to take up. I think maybe just to explain some of the history, so that we're officially now in UK Alumotor 2. That's the funded project that we're in the consortium with. All of the consortium members were also involved in an earlier project, UK Alumotor 1, and that was looking at some of the earlier concepts and some really wacky ideas. And even before that, Ricardo had been developing kind of this process, this approach, and this kind of theme for a number of years, and honing it into something, into production. Whilst we're really trying to emphasize this low cost, robust as the motor concept that we're building, I did touch on at the start, we're also looking at a high performance variant, and that was where kind of Stuart was leading us in there with the different rotor concepts. So the idea here is that we have our kind of relatively cheap, our robust, our stamped steel lamination that we use for the main concept. But if we remove that and replace that with something that's a higher performance, so this is utilizing some of those 3D printed materials from PSI, using a filament wound approach to the rotor to allow it to go to much higher speeds. Also utilizing some other composite approaches and some novel, what we're kind of terming a parachute design, to really exploit a synchronous reluctance type machine, but in a different way. That's got potential for us to offer a much, much higher performance, a much higher specific power, but with it some additional cost, but in such a way that we're still making best use of that approach of UK supply chains, no rare earth materials, and something a little bit different there. So that strand of the high performance motor is an important part of the project. It's something that we're developing mostly in simulation with some small trial parts, but it's going to be really exciting where that comes out to show how can you have a concept that allows some interchangeability within the production to offer perhaps options to two different markets.
That might link to a question I had actually for any one of you or all of you. Is it obviously off-road and agriculture was you mentioned as your primary sort of targets with this. Is that because at the moment, you know, they're slightly lower volume? Do you see this going forward as, you know, onto general road cars? And is that also what you were sort of reflecting there, Andrew, with talking about, you know, the higher performance? Would you see that ultimately as the ultimate step, you know, at that volume?
I think there's it's quite easy when you see kind of the most whizzy, the most exciting things in the media, they're often sports cars or very, very high performance. And it's all about those headline numbers. But in reality, if we need to get where we want to in terms of the environmental challenges in the future, we have to look at electrification from a much wider perspective. Sure. And this is why actually we're targeting some of these different areas that the traditional options are perhaps less suited to with the agritech and with the off-highway. With regards to our high-performance motor variant, I think even that, it's probably not so suited to the mass production of vehicles from a size and a packaging and a cost perspective. But I can see perhaps some options where something like that that's still very robust, and by taking those magnets out, we're stopping one of the real kind of big problems in terms of temperature capability. It gives us an option that's much, much more robust and potentially open up markets such as kind of mining and other bits where you need high performance, but they're also very aggressive as well. So that's some of the thinking behind that. I guess perhaps, Stuart, just offer up an opportunity there. Is there anything else in terms of markets and exploitation that WMG see as exciting in the future?
Well, yeah, I mean, to bring you back to Jeremy's point, I think that passenger cars are seeing an interesting trend where, you know, the electric machines are getting faster and faster. They're spinning at some astonishingly high speeds. And the power density of those electric machines is increasing dramatically as well. I mean, a few years ago, if we looked at something like, for example, the Nissan Leaf machine, I think it had a power density of around about 2.5 to 3 kilowatts per kilogram. Now we're looking at more like 8 kilowatts per kilogram for some of the Tesla machines. Right. And then if we look again at some of the more advanced machines that we're seeing coming out of for example, Lucid or Rivian or some of the others, then they're increasing up to about 16 to 20 kilowatts per kilogram. Now, that's a really amazing amount, because if you can imagine being able to hold in your hand pretty easily a 100 horsepower motor in your hand, that's just astonishing to me. That's almost like black magic. It's tremendous. Now, Alumotor isn't aiming at that. What we are seeing is a pretty good power density, I would say. I mean, we're not going to fill a passenger car full of power electronics and electrical machines without some compromises. But in things like applications like forklift trucks, agricultural forklift trucks, you know, those sort of things are the use cases are really interesting, because they have to work. You know, the if you think about some of the ways that, for example, combine harvesters work, you know, there's a particular time of year when they're really, really active, and any amount of downtime is a disaster. And really, that robustness is of prime concern. The cost may be a little less so, but also that efficiency target that Andy was talking about, you know, where we need to make these machines and systems, so including the inverter and the transmission as well, as efficient as possible, so that they can carry on working through the night, as they often do at different times of year. But then also, if we look at things like construction equipment as well, now they're really interesting use cases as well. Construction equipment is rarely used at night, so we've got a period of time where we can charge these vehicles up. Actually, what we see is that the charging infrastructure for those sort of things is really under a lot of pressure. And what we might see has been a move to maybe two different sorts of fuels. We could have battery electric vehicles. So things like dump trucks and forklift trucks, those sorts of things that are used in the construction industry, would have a moderate battery size. And actually, we might see some more pressure on the charging infrastructure. That means that they can't use a local energy supply, because, you know, they're building infrastructure. So, you know, if they're building HS2, for example, there isn't any electricity supply there. So what you could imagine is that there might be either a large battery move to site, or a fuel cell with some hydrogen supply, or maybe even local energy production as a small wind turbine, or maybe some solar arrays that gather energy during the day and then plug into the vehicles at night to charge them up. Now, in those sorts of circumstances, then the electric machine and the inverter, reliability and robustness is absolutely paramount. And that's really where we see Alumotor in its final form being most useful. In terms of other applications, then I could imagine that Alumotor would be actually quite useful for something like a marine drive.
I was going to ask about marine as a parallel sector. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, how does that? What would be the benefits of that, Stuart?
Yeah, so if you think again about the use case and how these boats and indeed ships are used, if we take an example of, let's take a pilot boat. So these are small boats that are used to bring a pilot out to a ship, the guy that brings the ship into port and takes responsibility of that. They have to be pretty fast. So they've got to be able to get out to the ship accurately, line up with the ship, and then drop the pilot into the boat. Actually, he climbs up a ladder on the side of the ship. It's a pretty dangerous thing to do. So again, we want something that's reliable. We can't have the motor just failing as the guy is stepping off the ladder. That would be pretty painful. But then also we've got that same sort of pressure on the electrical system. So the size of the battery, the type of control that it has, it's in terms of its charging and then power distribution, and then the impact on the motor is that it needs to be responsive, so fairly high torque, be able to put down the power accurately, and be well controllable. It'll all still mate up to a transmission and then drive the propeller that way. But what you could see is that there's a really fairly realizable and feasible way to get rid of diesels, that's the primary source today, and go to a battery electric type of arrangement. The other application that I could see that would be most suited to these high efficiency machines like Alimota might be for things like crew transfer vessels as well. So these are the little boats, usually catamarans, that go out to wind turbines to bring people and goods and spare parts, for example, out to our offshore wind fleet. There's going to be a huge number of those. I mean, by 2030, we're expecting to see, 8,000 to 10,000 wind turbines out there. And the distance from port out to the array is becoming larger and larger. And really, there's no point having a diesel engine to do that. You seem to be defeating the object, really. So those type of applications, I think, will come to the fore.
You know, what does the consortium allow us to do next? Thoughts on that?
I think this is kind of a really important point. We're talking around this exciting technology and kind of what it's going to be able to produce, but how that's come about from Ricardo's perspective, as I was saying, it's something that we've been working on for quite a while, but we would never be able to bring this into production in isolation. It's really important that we get access to really innovative businesses and other partners that can help us develop this, and not just develop it from a technical perspective, but how we actually go forward to manufacturing. So the likes of PSI are a company that aren't too far along the coast from us here in Shoreham. They're along kind of based over in East Sussex, but we just wouldn't have come across them without this sort of consortium type approach and making the links there. Similarly with GTR, we know them well. They get there the other way along the coast, over a bit further over in West Sussex, but having access to some real world class experts in composites has allowed us to test and try some things in some areas that we just wouldn't be able to do before. And I guess perhaps bringing back to some of Rowan's other points, our ability to test the designs out and work through with a supplier who's actually can go from a very, very early stage prototype scale up to full scale manufacture and anything in between has given us options and that access to feedback that we just wouldn't be able to do on our own. So, I mean, Rowan, I don't know, perhaps it's better for you to say what a consortium type approach is able to do for you, because that's the benefits from Ricardo's side have been massive, but I'm hoping it's something similar from you as well.
Definitely it is. So headlines for me, you know, 10 years ago we'd never stamped a motor lamination in our lives. Here I am today as an expert contributing to a consortia of companies that I would never even have a chance of trading with, let alone offering advice to. So, you know, the benefits for an SME like Brandauer of being involved in this consortium type is huge. Just to go back to the point around sectors, for us, that's been driven by the other partners, for sure, by the lead partner, really. But what it does for us is we're a privately owned company, very diverse in the geographies we supply, also the sectors we supply, and that has kept us in business. Being a diverse company in terms of the markets we're in, the technology we're supplying into, all of that, every time there's a recession or a pandemic or whatever else is thrown at us, we end up being affected less than others who have all their eggs in one basket. So another hidden benefit of being involved in this, it's potentially attacking markets like marine and agriculture, which are markets we're not in at the moment. How great is that? Yeah. So yes, it's not a now thing. We're not going to be supplying in volume, but ultimately it gives us a big opportunity to be doing that in the future. Picking up another point that Andy made around that scalable approach, I suppose, there's the knowledge piece, which we're doing a lot of at the moment, but then making the first few parts. Well, there's two or three ways to do that, really. Two main ones, wire EDM, which we have in-house, or laser cutting. And we're now moving to a point where we're confident enough to be bringing that capability in-house by the end of this year, which means we can be laser cutting thin gauge lamination. So that's at your early stage when you maybe want 10 to 100 stacks, something like that. We can laser cut them, which means there's minimal or no tooling really to make the parts. It's an expensive process, so that the piece part cost per part per stamp is higher. But of course, it's a quick way of everybody trying out in real terms a production representative status stack. And then the next bit we've developed with other consortia, which this consortia will probably benefit from, is a standard set of tooling that then we can interchange punches and dies to offer different geometries. It's not a full investment in a production tool, but it allows stamped parts, which behave differently to laser cut parts, which behave differently to wire EDM parts, to be done at an earlier stage. So when you've done your 100 stacks, you maybe want 500. At that point, we can start thinking, well, let's go more production representative. And then obviously, the utopia is we get to a full production tool, all singing, all dancing, running at speed, potentially making, you know, two or four parts per blow, full material utilization. But that's such a long way off with a big investment and high risk. And what we want to do is to steer our partners through that journey to give them the lowest risk, most production representative solution at the best price we can.
So Rowan, are you looking for, you know, reaching out to partners at the moment, and you know, what stage is that at, if you like, and how can perhaps the supply chain, do they have an opportunity to contact the consortium to sort of talk about the opportunities potentially?
Look, you know, my day job really is sales director as well as running the company, because I don't have one, so I'd be a fool to not say, yeah, we're always looking for commercial partners, customers. But perhaps more importantly, we've had a huge amount of new business as a result of being involved in R&D collaborations.
Right. Yeah.
You quickly become the expert, because there is nobody else in the UK supply chain, and there's maximum overcapacity in Europe for people that you've got advanced knowledge in this particular very niche area. So it's been a game changer for our business. There's definitely a call to action for us. We want more R&D collaborative partners, and we'd love to be involved in other consortia. And definitely, I mean, the easiest way to get hold of me is via LinkedIn or our website. I'd love people who've got a project in mind to come to me.
Great. Yeah, good. And obviously Innovate UK has been doing a lot of funding and support of this project. How's that been working, and what sort of value have you got from that? I imagine it's been very important for you to help this. A question to the floor, really.
I can start off by saying that the Winding Centre of Excellence at WMG Warwick Manufacturing Group has been funded by the Driving the Electric Revolution Industrialisation Centres, which is funded by Innovate UK. So we have investment in terms of the capital goods that we use to make the prototype machines. But we also have support in terms of funding for people as well. And those sort of collaborative industry-led projects are exactly perfect for us. So we can get both academic but also industry advantage for the UK.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Andy, any thoughts on that from your perspective as the leader there of this consortium?
Yeah, I think kind of picking up some of the points from Stuart there. What Ricardo is kind of gaining from this is that we from our building not just sort of our technical background emphasis on these types of motors and developing our offering, we're building a huge amount of knowledge and expertise, tools and techniques that we can exploit on kind of different types of motor concepts, not just kind of the UK Animotor, but then helping other customers deliver really tricky and difficult technical problems, and what are the solutions to that, and bringing in then the wider supply chain to help, not just for Ricardo to solve the problems on the technical, but how then do you build the prototype, who do you go to, and sort of Ryan there talking around the benefits of building small scale and at mass production, and likewise kind of bringing in the likes of GTR and their composite background and applying that in some weird and different places. I think we've kind of built that as a whole in terms of our kind of expertise as a group, and able to deliver much more because of it. But perhaps just to touch then also on the sort of facilities from Ricardo's perspective, is we're designing and trying to solve these technical problems, but from a manufacturing perspective, Ricardo has been manufacturing both engines and transmissions for a long time now, and our focus and our area there is kind of niche manufacture for stuff that's really high quality, and this plays into Alumotor's kind of strengths. So what we really want to do is, through the course of this project, is then develop that capability to manufacture these motors in-house in the small medium levels to help support some of the industries that we're talking about. If then it becomes a much bigger success and we're looking at producing tens or hundreds of thousands of units per annum, that's the point from Ricardo where actually, no, that's more than what our core business is, and that's where we go on to try and find more manufacturing partners to support that. But within the group, there's certainly some of the players are able to step up to that challenge and deliver things on quite a large scale.
Ready? Yeah, that's great. I mean, you know. Do you have a time frame of aim where, you know, it would be great to have that achieved, to sort of have that sort of volume of manufacturing happening? Are you talking like the next couple of years, 5 years, or, you know?
Yeah, perhaps on just to sort of high level timing. So at the moment, this project, UK Animotor project, we started this in February 22. We're now just over a year into the project. We're in the procurement phase now. We're starting to get parts made. Those laminations are going to be cut any minute now. Hopefully, Rowan, yep. I'll get the designs out to you. So then we'll be starting to build the motors, and those motors will be on test in autumn of this year. We're doing a small batch run, plan to build 8 motors at this phase, and then from that take the learning and have some available for demonstration towards the sort of the first part, second half of next year. From there, then it's a case of using the knowledge and everything that we've learned through the consortium and exploiting that out to some potential customers. So in terms of what Innovate UK and kind of what the collaborative funding model is able to deliver for Ricardo, it means that we can do research and development at a much quicker pace. Where before we're looking at our funding and what we can afford to do, there is obviously a huge investment internally at Ricardo on electrification. But having the support from Innovate UK from a funding perspective allows us to accelerate that massively. So this particular project is sponsored by the Driving the Electric Revolution Fund as part of the kind of the wider Innovate UK, and that whole group associated with that has allowed us to make the contacts kind of with the consortium and grow that capability as a group as well. So I think that's sort of the benefits from perhaps a larger company and our aspects, but maybe Rowan, from the smaller company perspective, could you touch on what sort of the Innovate UK and kind of those funding mechanisms are able for you?
Yeah, for sure. So Innovate UK projects, this is actually our fifth consortia project. And as an SME, the benefits of them, we went into them blind. We didn't realise. And actually, certainly during the pandemic, these were a lifeline. You know, what do these projects do? Well, they offer up to 70% funding to an SME for the most expensive heads in the factory, your engineers, and a safe haven for them to do their job, in as much as you're in an R&D collaborative environment. So, you know, you're there to be able to take risks, you're there to be able to get involved with stuff that you've never been involved with before. Oh, and by the way, it's 70% funded as well. It's an absolutely fabulous effort. And in addition to that, there's other benefits in terms of all that R&D can be claimed back again through R&D tax credits the following tax year. It's a double win, really. And all of that has been a game changer for our business. It's brought new capabilities. It's brought new people into the business. It's brought new customers into the business. Oh, and by the way, you can draw down funding to get all of those benefits as well. Fabulous. They're absolutely brilliant. My only concern is that unless we shout about it and push and drive, that they won't be there anymore. It's a vital part to the UK being world class again.
Yeah. You mean when you say they won't be there anymore, you mean that the funding could
Correct.
Yes, okay, could not be
Correct.
There anymore. Well, yeah. Well, hopefully this plays a part what we're doing today and pushing this sort of discussion out through our big audiences as well will help that. And you're right, it's great to see these initiatives coming through the government, ultimately ways of funding. And yeah, we're good. We're great in the UK at this stage, aren't we, in terms of, you know, having these innovations, working with world class universities and R&D like yourself, Stuart, at WMG as well, and great companies like Brandauer and Ricardo. And we probably don't do this sort of leveraging of this sort of thing enough and getting it out there and getting it into industry. And the more of that we can do, the better. But this is obviously a great example of how this can work very successfully. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's really fascinating. It sounds like it's a great example of what the UK can do, and hopefully it's going to demonstrate that we can put it to actual application and use, and that's going to be really exciting to see, and to see the progress. Hopefully we'll be able to sort of keep in touch with you guys and the project in general as well, and sort of do updates in terms of how it's going and demonstrate things, both perhaps with a prototype or some sort of demo at the show, but even if not, you know, another podcast or another ways of doing perhaps a presentation on about it in some of the other things that we're doing going forward over the next year or so. It'd be great to really see how this progresses, which I think it's going exceedingly promisingly at the moment. It's probably time for me to start thinking of bringing things to a close, actually. But is there anything else that any of you wanted to bring up and chat about?
Well, I certainly could say, Jeremy, from that summary there, I would very much welcome the opportunity to come back and tell you again about the updates and the exciting things that we're delivering in the project here. I think, the time today to shout about the project and the benefits of this type of project work and kind of what we're able to do as a group has been really, really valuable. Really appreciative of the time. And just really would like anyone who's kind of interested to hear more, kind of reach out to myself, Stuart or Rowan, obvious channels. Like to speak to people about this, and it'd be great to get the message out there.
Great. Well, hopefully you should get some good interactions from that. To round up, to round things up now for the final minute, let me just go over again the three of you and where you've come from. So Andrew Lane from Ricardo, Principal Engineer, Electrified Systems, Ricardo Automotive and Industrial. Thanks for joining us, Andy. It's been great. Also, Rowan Crozier, CEO of Brandauer and Chair of Make UK's National Advisory Board. Thanks for your insights today as well. Lovely to have you, Rowan. And last but not least, Stuart Bradley, Principal Engineer from Warwick Manufacturing Group. Thank you also, Stuart, for your insights. Really interesting conversation. We'll keep communications open and we'll talk again and catch up soon on this project. Thanks to all three and goodbye, everyone.